Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sound Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, my interview with retired Oakland librarian and author Dorothy Lazard. We're stepping out of the studio and going to Books, Inc. in Alameda for my conversation with Dorothy about her memoir, What You Don't Know Will Make a Whole New World. Today's show is about how books can change and save our lives. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sound Show with me, Janae Darden. There's a saying in journalism, everyone has a story. Well, Dorothy Lazard has an incredible story. She was the head librarian of the Oakland Public Library's Oakland History Center. Before coming to the Bay Area, she spent some of her childhood in an orphanage in St. Louis. Her life changed again when she moved to the Bay Area with her family. In her memoir, What You Don't Know Will Make a Whole New World, Dorothy writes about the impact that learning and libraries had on her young life. She gives us insight into being a caretaker for her mother when she was a kid, and what her life was like living in San Francisco and Oakland during the 60s and 70s. Back in January, I spoke with Dorothy for nearly an hour in front of a live audience at Books, Inc. in Alameda. We began the event with an introduction and poem from the store's events coordinator, Jerry Thompson. Enjoy.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Books, Inc. Alameda. My name is Jerry Thompson. I'm the event coordinator here. And on behalf of the entire staff and the entire town, we welcome you to the event tonight. I don't know many things about Dorothy and Janae. I was going to call Janae's bookstore today. Janae and Dorothy. Dorothy and I, we go back many, many years. Not that many, but enough to know that this is long time coming for us to sit in the same room and to have Sister Janae and you guys be a part of this amazing conversation. Dorothy, of course, as many of you know, has been a legend in the Bay Area for her work with the Oakland Library, and of course, her first book that came out, we're celebrating today in the conversation, and Janae Darden, superstar woman, KALW, Sights and Sounds. I've adopted you as my sister recently, and we both have books here tonight, too, which are available for purchase. I did my normal thing. I wrote a little intro poem for the two, and I call the poem "When a Purple Rose Blooms," which is the title of Janae's book, and it goes like this. These are the coolest women I know on the planet. Not even the greatest hits from Patti, Leon, or Janet can top this moment before you. Sisters catching history, a conversation for two. That's right, there's Dorothy Lazard, who has so much to say. There is the host of Sights and Sounds, Lady Janae. We're recording it all, keeping it live. The chit-chat and the chatter and the oohs and the ahs. So let your hair down, relax, snap back, or curled, because what you don't know will make a whole new world.
He dropped the mic and handed it to me. How can I follow that? Give it up for Jerry Thompson. Thank you, Jerry, for that beautiful and warm introduction. Good evening, everybody. It's so good to see everybody's faces. We know it's a lot going on in the news, but we're going to make space for joy. Yes, yes, and good conversation and community and just being together. So, yeah, I'm excited. So, my name is Janae Darden. I host Sights and Sounds. I cover arts for KALW 91.7 FM. We're NPR affiliate station here in the Bay Area. And I am here with the Dorothy Lazard. And I'm going to read a short bio from her website. Dorothy Lazard was born in St. Louis and grew up in San Francisco and Oakland. She's from the Lou. She began her career, okay, give it up for the Lou's in the house. St. Louis in the house, all right. She began her career as a librarian in 1983, and then she later joined the staff of the Oakland Public Library in 2000. And from 2009 until her retirement in 2021, she was the head librarian of the Oakland Library's Oakland History Center, where she hosted and delivered history lectures, mounted exhibits, and wrote articles about Oakland history. So she knows a lot. I definitely think she's an Oakland gem. I've told her that before. Her memoir, as you see, is What You Don't Know Will Make a Whole New World, and it's received all kind of honors and awards. And her memoir was a Northern California Book Award finalist in 2024. So, yeah, congratulations. So, yeah, so Dorothy's just really cool. Just really cool. Great to talk to. It's just been a pleasure getting to know you and learning, you know, what you don't know make a whole new world. I feel like I stumbled upon a new world just learning more about you, you know, reading your memoir. And, you know, again, as I said in the bio, you lived in St. Louis, Oakland, and San Francisco, growing up as a child. And the memoir is like a coming of age book. And one of the things that stood out to me is your spirit of wander and wonder. So, like, I loved reading about how when you would, I mean, this is back in the 60s, where you could walk around San Francisco, walk all over Oakland as a little kid. And like, and it was safe to do that. And you were so curious. And I just wanted to know, like, where does that spirit of wonder and wander come from?
I don't know. I was always just curious about what lay on the other side of the street or the other side of the neighborhood. I was just a curious kid wanting to know, well, how'd you get to be here? This is how I got to be here. It was that simple. But then I really wanted to know, well, you know, when I came to California, I had never lived in a racially mixed anything. And so it was interesting for me to just be in the Haight-Ashbury in 1968. And, you know, the whole world was kind of blowing up with, you know, cultural shifts and racial shifts and everything. And so it was... I just wanted to know more about how this world was wired here in California. Mm-hmm. But I was curious before California, because I would wander St. Louis and go down to near the railroad tracks by the Ralston Purina factory. And there was a shoe factory that now is a children's museum in St. Louis now. So, yeah, I was just always curious about how far I could go also, not just what I would find there, but how far I could go.
And I just want to read a quote from your book. So this was little Dorothy's mind at around age of 10. And you wrote, "Before I decided to become a writer, however, my first ambition was fundamental. I just wanted to be smart." And I was like, that's pretty deep for a 10-year-old. So why was being smart so important to you? And why did you want to be smart?
It gave me a sense of agency. It gave me a sense of I can make my own way. You know, I can do my own thing if I am smart enough to do it. I was looking for expansion. I was looking for agency. I was looking for anything that would give me some sense of freedom that I didn't have in my home.
Wow, just to be that enlightened at such a young age. And how did libraries play a role?
Well, just opened the doors for me, because the library was a whole universe that I didn't know prior to, 10 years old and discovering the Western Edition branch. It was amazing to just go there and be able to touch everything. You know, to touch everything, look at everything, learn names, learn new words, be introduced to new authors, and find yourself in these books. That's what was so incredible to me.
I love when you discovered, you discovered the library in San Francisco, and then when you moved here to the Bay, to Oakland, you discovered the library. I felt like it was like a superhero, like coming into their powers, like, oh, that's how she turned
sure.
into...
For sure.
To Dorothy. Da, 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 da. That's what I was like. I got excited. I was like, when did she get to that part? You were something else that, how many people have read the book? Okay. I know the St. Louis people have read the book. You had a really beautiful part in the book about teachers, especially your Black teachers, and what they instilled in you, especially to around the 70s, because we're looking at Black Power Movement. I'm thinking about my grandfather who told me, he said he didn't really, the first time he was proud to be Black was when he heard James Brown's song, "I'm Black and I'm Proud." But you talked about the importance of seeing Black excellence from your teachers. Can you expand on that?
Sure. I thought, well, somewhere in the book, I talk about how it was the first best time to be a Black kid in America, at least in my estimation, because it was the first time that I noticed, number one, that there was representation on TV. There had always been, in my life, representation in music and so forth. But it was the first time that we got to see more people on TV, more people in public office, and our teachers were telling us to be proud of who we were, and they kind of loved us in a way that we hadn't been, you know, kind of publicly loved before. They were proud to be Black. They were proud to wear a dashiki. They were proud to wear their hair natural. And that pride kind of rippled down to us, you know. We had some really beautiful teachers at Elmhurst Junior High School. Did anybody go to Elmhurst Junior High School in this room? Probably not. Yeah, well, Gerald. my husband went to Elmhurst Junior High School. So there was something very powerful about that time. It was a very empowering to have a group of people, teachers in this case, talking to us about what we should be proud of, you know, things that we hadn't been told before, that we were beautiful, that our skin was beautiful, that our nappy hair was beautiful. And it was just wonderful to have there. And you know, it wasn't kind of like dogma. It was more, this is just who I am. I've accepted myself. And it was wonderful to have them show us that self-acceptance. Because prior to this, we hadn't had that expressed to us. You know, we had gone through a whole period of time where the teachers were kind of not really focused on our culture, you know.
You had a teacher that your aunt had to check.
Yeah. Checking is good.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to talk more about that particular teacher. You got to read the book.
You have to read the book. And I'm thinking, too, about your grandmother. You and your siblings, or some of your siblings and your mom, had lived with when you migrated to California. And, you know, like, you wanted to get a library card. She didn't want you to get a library card. Correct me if I'm wrong, as far as the wording. She wasn't too favorable about your curiosity and you wanting to write. How did the Black teachers who instilled Black excellence in you, how did they counter that? Like, as far as even maybe you embracing more of your nerdiness too as well?
Well, you're always supposed to be embracing your nerdiness, if you ask me.
I agree.
See? See there? My grandmother, you know, since this book has been out, it came out in May 2023, and a lot of people have asked me about my grandmother, Ella Baskin. And what it was, Ella Baskin. I've been kind of forced to kind of reassess my relationship with my grandmother, who was my mother's mother. She was a hardworking woman who had worked as a maid and a nurse's aide, and she saw, for those of you who haven't read the book, she saw writing and reading as kind of like a waste of time. You know, it's like you're supposed to have a job and work and things like that. And, you know, having to talk about her and trying to get an assessment of how she viewed my life and the times that I was growing up in, it was just very different, way to look at things. I was looking at it as my life as this one big adventure, this acquisition of information, of knowledge. But she was looking at it as, you're kind of wasting time doing this. You don't want to be too smart. You know, boys won't like you. She said it more than a few times. Boys won't like you if you're too smart. And then I want to know, well, how smart is too smart? Because why not? I want to know. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
So she just had a different view of what a life could be. And people have put it in my head as made me consider the notion of wanting more than you deserve, you know. And I think she was also trying to protect me, I think, in her own way. She was trying to protect me and look at learning as an impediment. Yeah, I think.
But your mom seemed to be encouraging of you wanting to have a bigger life and seeing life as an adventure. Mm-hmm. And I understand from the book that she was dealing with health issues, mm-hmm. epilepsy, and you and your brother lived in a Catholic orphanage for some time in St. Louis, I guess, because your mom, I assume because she couldn't take care of you all because of health issues.
Right.
But talk about your mom as far as her being encouraging of you. And she kind of would be a little trickster sometimes, your mom would, in trying to like protect you and to encourage you.
Yeah. My mom was just this quiet, she was kind of a trickster because she didn't have any power in our family outside of the St. Louis life we had lived. She had grandma epilepsy. She was married to this very old man, and at some point we were taken out of the home and put in St. Vincent's day home, which was a German orphanage. And she was someone who, once the family got reconnected and we migrated here to California, to the Bay Area, she was someone who was very watchful and, you know, her position in the larger family kind of got recalibrated. When we got here with among all of her sisters and brothers and her mom. And so we had to kind of reconfigure who our mom was, given those family relations. So she was someone who I think if she had been healthy would have had a very interesting life, because she was interested in art, you know, crafts, things you do with your hand. She was interested in cooking. She loved cowboy movies. She loved taking walks and finding things on the ground that she could make art out of. And, you know, I've always wondered what she would have been like had she been well.
Yeah.
Had she been more regularly well.
I wonder where you got your sense of wonder and wonder from then, huh?
Probably from her, for sure. Yeah.
How did, and you were a caretaker to her as a child, how did that shape you?
Well, it shaped me in that I was someone who got older before I needed to, mm-hmm. you know? Someone who was responsible for doling out medications and cooking and things like that. So it was really hard, and I write about this in the book. It was really hard for me to get used to being someone who was responsible for someone else. It was hard for me to be a kid. And I talk about that for a bit in the book about, you know, kids don't really talk about anything worth listening to, you know? And, you know, it was hard for me to be outside and, you know, it's like step on a crack, break your mother's back. And it's like, this is stupid, you know? So, I don't know. It was this was just something that we had to get used to, you know, being a kid and being outside with the kids who weren't really doing anything. It's like, I'd rather go back inside and read or watch a cowboy movie with my mom.
And so books were an escape.
Absolutely.
Books gave you joy. Still gave you joy. Still give you joy.
Yeah, they gave me joy, but they also gave me a lot of information about how expansive the world is. Yeah.
Did you read all kind of stuff? City planning. This one, she was like a little girl. Like, you just read some kind of stuff.
Well, I still read all kinds of things.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. I shared with you a couple of weeks ago some of the stuff I just read. And yeah. There was like this dead silence in the other end of the phone.
That's because I was in awe. It wasn't judgment.
Well, I read this book, Capital City, which you should all read, about gentrification and the role of real estate. And what was the other book I read about the cholera epidemic of 1854?
Yeah, it was that.
In London.
Light reading, very light reading.
It was so fun. And she was just dead silence on the phone. And it was like, okay, that's not something she's going to read.
No. No, it was the cholera one. I was like, yeah, I'm not ready for that right now.
It was fascinating.
I'm sure it
anything
was.
any book with the word map in it, I'm gonna read.
Yeah.
The ghost map, by the way, if you're interested.
And you know, and I know you say, like, you know, some people, like, they may read a book like because it's a new book and it's the hot new thing. And
I haven't read the new hot thing in so many years.
Whatever comes calling to you, that's what you pick up.
Also, I'm a big frequenter of our little free little libraries in our neighborhood.
Me too.
There are 17 in my little neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so being that there are 17 little free libraries in my book, I hardly ever go to a bookstore. Sorry, Jerry, wherever you are.
I'm on.
But, you know, I think you should. Come to Books, Inc. in Alameda all the time. But anyway.
I know you love information.
Yes.
You love learning new things.
Yes.
How does it feel as a librarian when you see people enjoying literature, when you see people enjoying learning new things?
Well, it's always a thrill. It's always a thrill to go to a library or to just be wandering around a library and seeing people wandering around a library. It's the library and bookstores are the commons. You know, they're the commons that I think we most readily have created for ourselves. And we do it in those little free libraries, in book talks. You know, yeah. There are so many different ways that we can share information, and I love the fact that we create these kinds of spaces where we can share information with mm-hmm. each other. I love it. Well, that's what was so wonderful about working at the main library, because it was, you just learn so much. There's no day that you don't learn something when you are a frequenter of the library or an employee of the library.
So that's the thing you loved most about being a librarian?
Well, the fact that you have created this community and you help foster that community. I love that. Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned community, because I wanted to ask you too, as far as we're all here gathered here. And I think right now with everything that's going on, reading is even more vital. More important. I met some people in the audience through, I had crashed a book club meeting the
really?
Other day, because I crashed a book club. I was so rude. But I needed to meet with Jerry, and so he was having a book club meeting. And I was just saying.
Here?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-oh, she might come, and she might buy a book. Look at that. But talk about, like, I guess the importance of maybe how books build community and the importance of maybe building community now. And really, with everything going on and making that space for joy of reading.
Well,
community.
We need to escape. we need to escape. So we really do need to both pull together, but also step away and, you know, have a moment for ourselves to read and enter these new spaces, these imaginative spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that we have, you know, public things like this, but also time for ourselves. We had a great book talk with a I was invited to participate in someone's book club last week. And we had such an engaging conversation with these five women that I had never met before. One of them invited me to her house, and we just had just a really fabulous time talking about not just my book, but talking about growing up in the Bay Area. And we talked about politics, and we talked about what the Haight-Ashbury was like during the 60s, because a few of us had grown up during that time. And it was just this kind of wonderful rambling conversation. And it was great for me to have that kind of experience where we are, I'm looking at or learning how they ingest literature and how they interact with the story that I told, but also the conversation that we had.
Yeah. You know? I was at an event at the San Francisco Public Library. It was on Black horror writing, it was Black Horror and Healing. You can go on to the San Francisco Public Library YouTube, and they have all the videos. It's a whole day long thing. And someone had stood up, and they were reading the Patternist series by Octavia Butler. And I just started reading it. I'm halfway through it, and I stopped reading it because I was like, I need to read this with somebody because I just need to talk to somebody about it. But it's been out for so long, so I went up to the guy and I was like, "You want a buddy?"
Well, I was like, "I need a buddy." I think that's cool that you did that.
I'm an extrovert. I was like, "You want a buddy?" So I'm excited. I hope he's listening because I was serious.
Have you planned to meet up with this person?
So, well, we've texted, and so he's finishing up another book, and then we're going to start the third book of the Patternist series, Clay's Ark.
Now, is the Patternist series the one that has the one that everybody's talking about now?
No.
That's a Parable of the Sower.
Yeah, that's not
the everybody's Bible. Talking about Parable of the Sower now because somebody, I see somebody shaking their head.
Yeah, it's pretty prophetic.
I mean, it's was she clairvoyant? Was Octavia Butler clairvoyant? I mean, she said somebody's nodding in the back. The fact that she set the book in 2025 and we have these horrific fires in Southern California, and this is all the stuff she talked about, and you know, the political leadership being kind of wackadoodle. Yeah. So anyway.
She said, I watched an interview where she said she just pays attention.
Yeah. She's not.
I just pay attention.
She's not forecast. She said that she pays attention to what's going on now. She's not creating some massive fictive world,
right?
But all of this stuff can happen, and here we are,
right?
Referring to her quite a lot. You know, I've heard so many and read so many articles in the last month and a half, referencing her book.
Speaking of her, have you seen her journal entries?
Only the bit that was part of the Afrofuturism exhibit at Oakland Museum a few years ago.
Yeah.
And they had a few examples of her journals.
Yeah, and she wrote affirmations about being a successful writer.
Even when she was a kid.
Yeah, yeah. It's something about y'all. You too. Do you still journal? Because I remember you were journaling as a child.
I don't even call it journaling anymore. I used to, for Christmas, I'd always get a hardbound journal. All of them are kind of moldering in the basement now of my house. But I don't do it in that way where you're writing something every day. Mm-hmm. Now it could be... It's not as formalized as that. Now it could be just scraps of paper or something I've written in the notes app on my phone or something like that. And it's not this kind of formal, I can go back to that particular day.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about what day I'm having this feeling, but I, you know, write it out. So yes and no. I'm not journaling, but I am journaling. I'm always journaling.
Ah, okay. I journal a lot. I've been journaling since I was 7, but I don't write it. I don't journal every day, but
I used to do that when I was a teenager, and I thought all of my thoughts were very profound.
That's because we had time. That's when we had time. Because we have time.
Because what are you going to do? You're going to watch TV, and then you're going to eat, and then you're going to talk to your phone and your friend. And so, yeah, ain't nobody got time for all that
I
now.
I know. I was like, why did I rush one to be an adult? I was like, I'm going to be grown and pay bills and taxes.
Yeah, see? Nobody needs all that. Nobody needs all that.
So what are you working? This, again, this is a really fabulous book. I really encourage everyone to get a copy if you haven't read it. It's really, really, really good. It was hard for me to put down.
Thank you.
I told you it was. So, and I just love to just going back in time and just seeing how things were. And you
Did
know,
you learn much about Oakland reading this book?
Yeah, I learned too. A lot of things haven't changed. Like your part about West Oakland, some of the issues happening in West Oakland. True. And in downtown are still going on.
Yeah.
But just the fact, like I said, for me, just the fact you could just walk around, you know, and
I was always curious about how things got put together. You know, why does this place look the way it does? Why is it that there's so much talk and news and stuff about redevelopment, but you kind of don't see it happening?
See it, yeah.
It's kind of glacial in its movement. So I was really impacted by that, and I was also curious, why did we move down here and they were tearing the whole place up? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And I wasn't deep in West Oakland as a teenager. I was like literally on the outskirts of downtown, like that first block of residences.
Right.
You know, after they tore out miles of houses.
Right. And that's when they built 980.
Yeah. We watched that being built.
So you're working on another book.
Yes. Who have you been talking to?
I know. I got sources. I got sources. So what is this? What is your next book about?
My next book about is about my career at the Oakland Public Library, the main branch. Woo-hoo, main branch.
Woo, I love the main branch.
We got some of my former coworkers in the audience.
Hey, shout out to Oakland Public Library and librarians.
And librarians.
Yes, literary superheroes. So what about it? About your career?
I wanted to, I see this book as a book for the public who says they support librarians and love libraries, and that's fabulous. And I also wrote it as kind of like a Valentine to my coworkers.
Aww.
Because we do a lot more work than people think.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I wanted the public to have an understanding of what really goes on in a public library, what considerations are, you know, taken in putting the books on the shelves that you find on the shelves. And I also spent a lot of time talking about the cultural role of the public library, the social and mm-hmm. cultural role of the public library. What does it mean to be a librarian in this digital age? What does mm-hmm. it mean to be a Black librarian in a predominantly white profession? I talk about that, and I talk about some of our favorite and most challenging patrons.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And some are challenging, and some are absolutely wonderful and yummy. And so it's a real mix. It's a little bit of public policy and memoir and social science and
Oh, sounds good. Behind the scenes.
Actually, behind the desk.
Uh-oh.
At Oakland, Maine. That's the name of it.
Make sure you all have turned in your books on time.
That's right.
If you got outstanding fines.
Do people here know that you could get a library card anywhere in California? Mm-hmm. In any city in California? Good. Everybody's shaking their head.
Well, for those listening who don't know, now they know. We have a few minutes for questions. I just ask that when you ask the question, you talk into the mic because we're recording this. Does anyone have a question for Dorothy? Y'all just smart. Y'all don't have no questions. No? Then everybody hands it up.
Okay, we could just go boop, boop, boop. Okay, we'll pass the mic. And please talk into the mic. So when I talk into the mic? Okay, there we go. Okay. So when you spoke about living in Haight-Ashbury, what were some of the favorite things that led you to, I want to read a book about this? Or were you just enamored by the things that you've seen and the people and the surrounding area, how it was a melting pot opposed to being in the, you know, that transition?
Well, the transition was, it was fascinating, but it was also hard too, because, you know, I had never been around so many different kinds of people, and how do you approach them? How do you talk to them? Are you welcome into their homes? And I found out, no, you're not always welcome into their homes. No, they don't always want to be friends with you. So just kind of learning how to negotiate, you know, society as a kid when society has expanded greatly. So that was, you know, challenging, but still interesting. It's just like, well, why do you eat that? You know? And then it was my first time knowing any biracial kids. And it's like, how does that work? You know? Kids who were like Black and Jewish, you know, or Black and white, like, you know, maybe Protestant or something. I don't know. To me, it was just interesting. And any interest you find in the world, I also wanted to find in books. So, yeah. Catherine had a question.
When does your new book come out?
I have no idea because it's still in my computer. I haven't finished it. I'm editing it now. And I've gotten some positive feedback from my publisher, but, you know, no commitments yet. And anyway, I'm looking forward to having it done, but I'm also a little bit sad about having it done because I like it. And it's kind of like when you read a good book, it's like, oh man, it's just one chapter left, you know? So I like what I've turned it into. And I feel like I'm with it. I feel like I'm honoring the profession and I'm honoring those who deserve to be honored in the profession.
I have to admit, I didn't want your book to end either. So, and I know it's more of a story because I was like,
well, some people got mad at me because I ended it where I ended it. And I was like, why didn't you go on? There were like 3 pages left and I knew you weren't going to be, you know.
I wasn't mad, but yeah. I was like, I want more. So I was happy when I found out.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not to be all in your business, but to be all in your business. Right? Yes.
So I'm curious, from a person who liked to be in libraries for information and reading to a person who works in libraries, what was your transition or thought process that, like, oh, I could work in a library?
You know, I got into library science in a weird way because I was volunteering. I was maybe a sophomore in college, and I was volunteering for this wonderful and sadly defunct organization called Black Filmmakers Hall of Fame. And do you remember Black Filmmakers Hall of Fame? Were you living in the Bay Area then?
I was barely living in the Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Anyway, so it was a wonderful nonprofit that, you know, celebrated and tried to preserve the history of Black participation in film. And they had this fabulous event every February where, you know, people like Sidney Poitier and Lena Horne and, you know, anybody who was an actor or a dancer, you know, the Nicholas Brothers or something would come and you'd get to meet them and stuff like that. But they were starting to collect a lot of film memorabilia, books, different things, not so much books, but ephemera, you know, like slides of their programs and photos of their programs. And somebody I think it was Judy Vaughn, convinced me to go to library school. And I was like, and I hadn't even thought of library school. And I went all the way through library school, which at the time was mercifully 1 year. But I had never worked in a library. And then, fortunately or unfortunately for me, a few months after I finished library school, my boss at a small library on campus had a baby, and then she didn't want to come back from maternity leave, and she's like, do you want my job? That's a time when you could just give somebody your job. And so I just stepped into the job, you know, like the lazy git that I am. And so and I stayed there for the rest of the 80s, you know, and then moved into another equally small, less small library on campus, and stayed there for 9 years. You know, so I did like 16 or 17 years on Cal's campus. So I kind of bumbled into the profession, I think. And then, you know, midlife crisis, I couldn't afford a red sports car. So I went to MFA school, and I had to get out of Cal. I wanted to leave Cal for a variety of reasons, and I ended up at the main library. So it wasn't like I grew up wanting to be a librarian. I just grew to love the profession by working in the profession.
Good question. Any other questions? Last question, a short one. Oh, okay, we only got one.
Hi, Dorothy.
Hi.
we saw each other a while ago. Recently, I listened to your episode on East Bay History, or East Bay Yesterday.
Okay.
About 16th Street Station in Oakland. Can you talk to us a little bit more about your activism and how you are, like, your activism and sort of the combination of being an educator, being a librarian, someone that loves Oakland, someone also that understands Oakland, and how that kind of comes together with your activism around 16th Street Station?
Well, she's referring to the 16th Street Southern Pacific Station that for now a generation or more has set a moldering in West Oakland. And it was a point of departure for the Great Migration. It was the hub, the work hub for the Pullman Porters. And it is an absolutely gorgeous building, less so now that it's, you know, fallen into dereliction. And so I worked with Oakland Heritage Alliance. They approached me and said, can you tell the story about the station? Because we want to put it on the National Register of Historic Places, which I think it should have been on, you know, decades and decades ago. But I just found out a couple of days ago that we did win. And it is listed on the National Register. And, you know, I kind of railed against, when I was working, I kind of railed against people calling me a historian. I felt like that was too lofty a title for what I saw myself doing. But I understand why people would call me a public historian. I understand that, you know, my knowledge of the city and my experience growing up in the city, my lived experience, really has helped people write books, make films, put on programs, you know, do research, get their doctorates, and so forth. And so I accept the title. It's a big role to play. I take it seriously. I don't know if I'm answering your question or if I'm just rambling at this point. Am I answering your question, Judy?
So how does that parlay into your activism?
Well, I don't know if I consider what I do activism. I consider it my responsibility as a citizen. Is that activism? Maybe.
Well, maybe it is. It's just maybe a different kind of wording. You know, I'm assigning some different values to it. But, you know, I feel like we all owe this city something, or whatever city we live in. We all owe that city something. And, you know, if you could, like they say, if you could save one person, you've made the world better. If you could save one building, you've, you know, because that building holds so much of our history. I mean, everybody who traveled by train, you know, the vast majority of people who traveled to the East Bay by train got off in that at that building. And I felt like that was worth saving. I feel inspired that we were successful in convincing the people who make those decisions about who gets on the National Register and who doesn't, and influencing the developers not to tear it down, or as they want to do, completely surround it by new housing but not rehabilitating it. I just felt like that was, yeah. So I will take your word and call myself an activist.
And I think that's a great place to end. Dorothy, I'm glad we got to do this. We've been talking about doing something like this for so many years. For so long. It's really been a pleasure. And I remember when I was younger and I was going to the library. So we have crossed paths before this.
Yes.
But thank you for being here again.
And thank you for being Jerry's sister. Yeah.
Yes, thank you to Jerry. I'm your niece. You can adopt me too.
You can be my niece. I got lots of nieces. I got nieces in the audience.
Right. Yes. That's what I said. St. Louis is here. Shout out to Dorothy's nieces. Dorothy's book is What You Don't Know Will Make a Whole New World. She'll be hanging out for a while, so definitely buy some books. She'll sign them. And in my book here, When a Purple Rose Blooms, I'll be here too as well, hanging out to sign. Thank you to Books Inc. and Alameda, and especially Jerry Thompson, who is the store's events manager and coordinator. Thank you to KLW. Thank you to my producer back there and our engineers. Shout out to Dorothy's publisher, Heyday Books. Thank you all for coming tonight. You can listen to my show, Sights and Sounds, on Thursdays at 7:44 a.m., 4:44 p.m., or you can listen on our KLW app or online. And you can also catch my interviews on Cross Currents. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night. Get home safe. Yay. Dorothy Lazar's book is What You Don't Know Will Make a Whole New World. Thanks again to Books Inc. and Alameda for having us. And a big thank you to KALW engineer Gonady Joe Johnson for his help on site at the store. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, board operator, Damien Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. As you know, we're living in chaotic, turbulent times, but the arts are playing a key role in getting me through. The plays, concerts, books, museums, films, etc., really give me hope. And I'm so grateful that both of our Sights and Sounds shows are joyful spaces for you, the listener. And I'm happy that both shows shine the spotlight on Bay Area artists. But the federal government is cutting funding for the arts and public media. So KALW's coverage of arts, culture, and music in the Bay Area is more important than ever. We need you to keep it alive. Please stand with KALW. Donate at KALW.org. And we appreciate you and we thank you. Now with that, we'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.